Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello, everybody, and welcome into today's episode of the Top Cut Yu-Gi-Oh! Podcast. My name is Sonny. I am your host, and I am here with my co-host, Blackwing Samoon the Poison Wind. And of course, I am here with my potential co-host, Trishula Dragon of the Ice Barrier. We will move into a little bit deeper intros later. I'm going to do the I'm actually going to do the sponsor ad reads real quick, but we're going to break that one down a little more here in a second. Of course, we want to thank all of our wonderful sponsors. You can find affiliate links as well as discount codes down below for gem accessories, as well as, of course, Dragon Shield. Skyhawk, your camera's not doing that card any justice. Whatever it is,
it's the card you just called me. It's Blackwing Samoon the Poison Wind.
I get that, but all I see is squares. That's all I see is squares.
Well, do what you gotta do.
So, you might want to go
boil. You Kraken?
Ooh, go boil your potato, Skyhawk. Fix your camera. Your potato or something. I don't know. Okay. So again, thank you to Gem Accessories as well as Dragon Shield. Also want to thank Tier Zero Games. Of course, we want to thank TCG Player and ETB Games and Steel Fox Games, my two locals. And all of our patrons. I think I got them all. Did I get them all? And Grimoire and Grimoire Accessories.
How could you? How could you forget Grimoire Accessories?
Because you didn't hold up that nice, beautiful block of gray.
True. That's correct.
No, I'm serious. I don't know what's going on with your video feed. It's insane.
It looks. Yeah.
It's like lost all of its color. Just real quick, I just want to acknowledge all of the MBT chatters that just hopped over into stream. Shout out to MBT. Thank you for the raid.
What's
currently
up?
Just
Holy
starting
crap.
The Top Cut podcast while we're just chilling here.
And it's perfect timing because I'm introducing our new co-host, Trishula TV. Welcome. That's right.
Asterisk.
That's me. I allegedly exist.
So we are here live on the Top Cut podcast. We literally just did the intro chat. It's perfect timing. A lot of people were wondering why we are suddenly moving to a live model where we are actually streaming every episode live on our YouTube channel, which is, of course, youtube.com/Top Cut Podcast. I don't know if that's what it actually is, but that's what I like to tell people it is. It's probably not that. Don't go look. Don't go look. I see you going to look. Don't go look.
I'm looking for the working link for you because there was a link that did work.
Okay.
Somebody has it. I think Rob maybe has it.
Yeah, yeah. I think this Rob, if you're here, post it again. Yeah. So
that might be the link.
We started doing the live streams because we wanted to be able to do live streams on our channel because we were also going to be introducing Trish TV. And when we record our podcast, happens to coincide with when he is live. And so it was kind of the motivation that we needed to go ahead and push to a every episode is not just recorded, but streamed live also. So with that said, thank you so much for, working us into your schedule and making this work for all of us. We are very excited to have you here. Skyhawk is our resident competitive player, always has been, but bless his heart, he doesn't play good decks. So it'll be nice to have you here playing good decks.
I'll try. You know, I do my best to, you know, not play losing decks.
At least you play.
But yeah. Yeah, I do play. I do play. Sometimes I don't win. Sometimes I play winning decks and I still lose with them.
I am going to a regional this weekend and I am going to play real Yu-Gi-Oh for the first time since nationals.
Oh wow.
He's been
That's where we're at.
He's been
I think that was the last time I saw you, wasn't it? That was at Nance.
Come to the regional this weekend. It's great. I'll pick you up from the airport.
That's
the okay. regional. Where's the
lots of points.
Where's the regional?
Houston.
Okay. That's a little bit.
Okay. You say that.
Let me get Expedia open. Let me get Expedia open.
Oh my God.
Flights from Chicago to Houston are going to be dirt cheap because they're both extremely major hubs. I'll pick you up from the airport. I can provide you free lodging for Saturday night, and I will bring you back to the airport on Sunday.
You two are both unbelievable.
All right. Hold on. If I go Expedia,
you must.
Worlds points. I have not played a regional since full power tier format. Full disclosure. I just realized that the other day in Richmond at the YCS, and
I'm not going
to
cover are flight, food, and entry.
Got it. So all the things I need to spend money on.
You don't need Uber or rideshare. You don't need lodging. These are important things.
Oh boy.
To Houston, all airports. What's the date? Is it this weekend?
It is this weekend. It's in 2 days.
Yeah. Okay. So from like Friday, from Friday to Sunday.
What do you mean? You're flying out at 4 a.m. on Saturday morning.
Oh, my bad. Okay. Let me redo the flight. Let me see.
I can find us a free place to stay for one night, not two.
Thank you all for coming to the Top Cut Travel Agency podcast. We're here to...
I will say this much. It is just debilitating watching that number go from like 160 to like 800 back down to like 350.
You do
so
not know how...
All of you chatters that left, I need you to go find all your friends that left and bring them back.
Do you not
all right. know For how the low price of $652, I can make it to the Houston Regional this weekend.
And with all the money I'm saving you by doing rideshare and lodging, that's not a deal.
Oh, right. It saves so much when I could instead just play a remote tour regional.
Literally true. Actually, are you playing in the remote tour regional on Saturday?
I might. You know, I haven't decided yet. There's also the MCS this weekend, so I haven't really decided which I want
to
do.
That's true. I think there's one happening Saturday and Sunday. I'm probably going to try to play one. I don't know if I can stomach both, but...
That's a lot of Yu-Gi-Oh to do that back to back 2 days.
The way that I don't know if this is just me, but when I do like a regional or a remote dual regional, I mean, remote is kind of a different experience, right? And that's sort of most of my competitive stuff has kind of been. But it's like the way that I see a remote dual event is like if I win, I get to keep playing Yu-Gi-Oh, and then if I lose, I get to stop playing Yu-Gi-Oh. So I really don't see a downside here.
There really isn't one, you know, when you put it that way.
It's like at Vancouver, I got dunked around three, and then I got to go do karaoke with my twin brother and all their friends. So I don't know who the real winner is.
that was much better than when I lost at Vancouver. I lost the last round of Swiss day one.
That is rough. That is unfortunate.
I think the last three YCSs I've gone to, nope, not three. It was less than three. At London, I went.
You got to round five, right?
Five or six rounds deep.
Yeah.
Niagara, I didn't do bad. I went eight rounds deep at Niagara.
Okay, that
was cool.
London.
Yeah, I was playing Sword Soul, and I was playing three Shatana. That way, I could special Shatana, normal Moyi, use Chi Shao to search the revive spell. Bring the Moyi back.
Oh no.
And then make a dweller. It was great.
Disgusting.
What do you want from me?
I think funny enough, the best that I've done pretty well at some regionals, but the best that I've done at a YCS, I think it's a tie actually. Both times I was one win off of day two. The first one was YCS Niagara 2019, back when I think Grand Maju won that event. It was when everybody was playing Cyber Dragon Orcus, and I was playing Blind Second Extravagance Dino, And I was, I think I lost, we drew round eight, but I gave the other guy the win because I didn't have a chance to top. And we both would have been knocked out anyway. But I was playing two Utopia and two Utopia double and just hoping to not banish them off of Extravagance.
Oh my god.
And then
Utopia double was so good back then.
It was so sick. And it was like, because over after Lost World was Utopia double and Pentastag pointing to the Lost World token. So you do 9,000 damage. Really busted. And that was pre-Arcosaur too, which was very funny.
You know what? It's a really good thing that we don't have to worry about banishing our extra deck staples on accident anymore.
Yeah, that's true. And then the other one, I did the same thing. I lost in the last round of day one at London playing Crystal Beast. I lost to a Zeus to cash player, and they topped it with no cards in hand, and they top deck Prosperity into Planet. And I was like, well, you got me.
the worst.
I'm dead. But shout out to Neshi, because I did cross.
Okay, so I talked about it on the podcast before, I think. Maybe not. But the reason for anybody wondering that we are adding a third person to the podcast is kind of layered. There's a lot to it. The first part of it and the biggest reason is that, to be honest, I've always kind of wanted the podcast to be three people. It didn't really make sense when it was just me and Caleb because we were doing it all in person and none of it was done remote. So it made more sense for the podcast to just be the two of us because we were the only two people that could consistently be at my house 3 days a week to record. But I've always wanted it to be three people, and that's because the podcasts that I listen to, I've felt are always better, more entertaining, and more compelling with at least three people. Another reason is that I think it's going to be honestly better content. I think that it will be a more entertaining and more compelling podcast, a more entertaining and more compelling conversation and discussion, and the information will be better because now it's not just me and Skyhawk misinformation counters. Trishel, you will also have a misinformation counter. So that way we can all keep each other in check and make sure that you guys are getting the most reliable, up-to-date, and best information possible. And the final reason that we want to do it is so that if there is a time when any one of the three of us cannot make it for whatever reason, the podcast doesn't just not go out because we only have one person. Right. So if need be, if a great example is about 3 weeks ago, I took about three episodes off because I just had like a mental breakdown. It was like stress and I needed a break. Essentially, I was just burnt and we missed two episodes of the podcast. And while it wasn't my concern, it was a thought that I had at the time. And that was kind of the thing that pushed me over to being like, OK, we're recording remote now anyway. So it's really time for us on the podcast to grow. And I feel like this is the best way. So now when Skyhawk needs an episode off for, you know, whatever reason he has going on, whether that be he ate a bad Terra King salmon or whatever, he ends up getting the time off that he needs. You know, if Trish is traveling to a YCS or if he is just having a really bad day on stream and or he's sick or whatever, he can just go and me and Scott can fill in. So it basically lets us continually keep good content going, but at the same time, when we're all three here, which is the expectation that we'll all three be here most of the time, we put out the best content possible.
Yeah.
So with that said,
the only time multiple of us will be gone is if we all play against runic players. Trish, they banish all the tracers. They banish all of my Edgemp chains, and they banish all of Sunny's Moyes. And that's when the podcast ends at that point. Actually,
yes. Now we'll be missing episodes still probably because, like, I imagine, for example, Nationals weekend, we're probably all going to try at least to go to Nationals. If there's a big YCS somewhere and we feel like we can all go, we'll probably all try to get together. And who knows, maybe I bring my laptop and we bring some like lapel mics and we do try to do a live podcast with all three of us in person. That would be super cool. But for now, I think that this would be the best step forward for our content and our viewers and listeners. So yes, a live podcast from a tournament sounds amazing.
Thank you. Thank you for the speech. Oh, great. Sunny of the Top Cut podcast. Thank
you. I would like to, seriously though, Trishla, thank you so much for coming in and just like when I thought of who to add as a third person, your name is one of the first that popped into my head, and there was a couple others, but when I really thought about it, I felt like you just had the perfect vibe. You have, you know, a wealth of competitive knowledge, which is something that while I personally don't, I like to see myself as being a competitively minded player. You see my shirt. Like, I have a kid, right? I have like a full-time, like lots of hours job, you know? I just can't keep up like I would like to. And Skyhawk, I don't know, he plays Fluffle. What do you want? So it's great to have you here.
Well, sure. it's thank you. Thank you for having me on. It's, you know, great to be a part of this. And thankfully I'm professionally, you know, unemployed. So I do get to play this game like very, very much. I think I have like 3,500 hours in Master Duel right now. And
that is wild.
Mildly concerning. Yeah. I mean, that's just my main account.
It reminds me.
I'm going to talk about the elves.
I was going to say, I feel like any streamer, like their Master Duel playtime is just inaccurate.
Because
like,
an immense I remember, feedback for anyone else?
I think MBT's, Duel Links account. I remember when he posted the screenshot of that. Oh, I was like, God. I can't believe that that's real.
What's crazy about that too is that because like Duel Links is the mobile game, that is like 3,000 hours of playing the mobile game on the computer. That's not even tracking like if he's playing it on his phone.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's weird. So I was thinking about like the amount of time I have spent playing, and it's like on the place that I played the most online was Dueling Book. And Dueling Network before that. And obviously Dueling Network is gone, so I can't track the insane amount of hours I put there from like 15 to 18. But playing Dino Rabbit Control with one rabbit for like 5 years. But I think my main DB account is like creeping up on 10,000 experience. I was like, on that one account alone, it's like 10,000 games. And then you think about like Master Duel, Duel Links, anytime that you go to locals, any other events, and you're like, oh my god, what happened?
Yeah.
It's an unbelievable, unbelievable amount of time. Whereas, but I don't know. It's, I get value out of it. It's, the game is fun, and you meet a lot of cool people doing it, so.
I agree. I do think you meet a lot of cool people. I met Trish at a tournament, so that worked out.
Yeah, I mean, if people, we all say that we play Yu-Gi-Oh! Like for Yu-Gi-Oh!, but I feel like a lot of people who at least go to tournaments are really just playing it just to like see people. You know, that's kind of the big thing, and like actually playing Yu-Gi-Oh! Is like the chore you have to do to like keep up, you know,
I went to a regional in August and I didn't play. I drove 4 hours to a regional and did not play. I get it.
Yeah, it's like the Yu-Gi-Oh part is like this is the thing that will give me the excuse to go see everybody. It's I don't know, for me, because like I guess generally speaking things can be tricky for me socially, but it's like you go to a YCS, that's a room of like 1,000 people that you can start a conversation with, because everybody knows like you can just be like, hey, what do you think about Cash Tira post ban list? Do you think you could still play it? Like, and it just goes from there. So I don't know, it's that easy.
So
yeah,
we generally spend some time when we are on these podcasts. We do a lot of different things. We review tournament results from meta tournaments. We go through and look at deck lists for tournaments. We review things that are happening within the community. We come up with our own original content. We do tier lists. Everybody loves a good tier list. But one of the things we do a lot on this podcast is we actually, when new cards are announced, we read the new cards and kind of not necessarily grade them, but give our opinion on where we think that the new cards will settle. And so I know I didn't talk to either of you about this in advance, but to be fair, I didn't talk to you about almost anything in advance of this episode.
That's how this usually works. Yeah. I got
I was just live on Twitch. I just got, you know, kidnapped.
I got
hold on.
Literally, I
worked 12 hours the last several days in a row. Hold on.
Guy said,
I'm sorry, I'm busy.
A guy messaged me like, oh yeah, by the way, Trisha's coming on. I'm like, okay. And then he's like, oh yeah, okay. we're starting at 10. Cool. Oh no, we're starting.
I knew Trish was coming on weeks ago. Hold on.
I didn't know the exact date.
I don't think I knew that I was coming on weeks ago. I think I knew like.
Wait, we scheduled this. Hold on, we scheduled this.
He's like,
I'm being set up, but I'm going to. The only cards I'm actually interested in reviewing at this time are the new Ritual Beast cards.
Ritual Beast.
I'm gonna send this to your Twitch chat, Trish, because. That way Twitch chat can follow along with us as we go through the new cards. So.
And I'm sure they all will.
Yeah.
I'm sure every single one of them will.
Oh, yeah.
I am actually going to take, I wonder if I can just take this tab, make it like this.
So while Sunny is boomering his way around the PC, Ritual Beast is the last chunk of support that we've got coming out of the Terminal World set. Previously, we got support for Ice Barrier, Gen X, and Infernoid. Varying playability. The Ice Barrier stuff is, like, I think, the biggest question mark. Abyss Dweller on legs is kind of crazy, but the payoffs are weird. The Gen X is, like, very glass cannon. The Link one is absolutely bonkers, but if it gets, like, Imperm Prevailer, you don't do anything. And then the Infernoid stuff is also kind of hard to evaluate, although the new Link 3 Fire Lady definitely makes it better. But this, I think, this is probably the best wave of support of the four, if I'm looking at it in a vacuum. So, Sunny, I don't know if you want to take away the first Ritual Beast monster.
So the first one that we have here is Spiritual Beast Tamer Lara. It's a level 1 light psychic effect monster, 100 attack, 2000 defense. You can only special summon Spiritual Beast Lara or Laras once per turn. You can only use the first, second, third effect of this card's name each once per turn. Sure. So you can only special summon and it's a hard once per turn. One, you can discard this card immediately after this effect resolves. Normal summon one Ritual Beast monster from your hand. Two, if a Ritual Beast card you control would be destroyed by battle or card effect, you can banish this card from your field or graveyard instead. Three, if this card becomes banished, you can special summon one Ritual Beast monster from your deck, except Spiritual Beast Tamer Lara.
Cards
so, nuts. This card has a lot of things. Is it good?
This is a custom card. This is like circular tier bonkers nonsense. I don't know that it makes Ritual Beast that, like, as good as Math Mech was with circular, but like Ritual Beast has like had a couple of like major problems. You'd have a problem where you can't match a tamer to an editor, like you have to open a very specific two card combo, and honestly you need like a lot more normal summons to get your play. So this is not only like an additional normal summon, you can banish this by like summoning a fusion monster, you can banish this by like a bunch of other means. So like banishing it being e-telly is crazy. Like if you banish it to make a fusion, you just get any name from deck, which is ridiculous. And then also having the Balinx effect is cool, I guess. It's like loads of the graveyard, Twitch starts everything, it's crazy.
Twitch chat made a good point here. It's not quite circular, but it is because it doesn't do one card combos. It doesn't initiate a one card combo. It enables all of your combos, but it doesn't initiate it by itself.
It isn't a combo. It does.
Is that less a product of this support and more a product of how the deck plays? Because Math Mech's always kind of been like one card go, just that circular does it better. But I feel like Ritual Beast. I know nothing about this deck. I feel like I should say that in advance, but I think that Ritual Beast has always been kind of more like a high combo deck, right? Like very long combos. And I would imagine that a two card combo kind of makes sense here, right? Sword Soul is not a one card combo deck, right? It's like a two card combo.
It's like
deck.
The new support does give it a one card combo. Rampengu is a one card combo, which is why the super is getting bought out. but it resolves a lot of the consistency issues. I don't know that I would call it like high combo. It's a long combo, but it ends on kind of a mid-range board. So we'll see. But I don't know. Trish, do you have any experience with Ritual Beast? Were you around when this was going nuts?
I was playing when the deck was around. I never played it personally. My only real memory of Ritual Beast was that it would take like 35 minutes to end on nothing. Like it would just it would just combo for forever, but the board that they made was like not scary.
It's like set, it just set two in a fusion.
it was more frustrating to play against. Yeah, like it was more frustrating to play against than anything, just because you knew that like you had to watch them play the game for like however long they wanted, and they just did not get to a point that was like super super terrifying. That's really all I remember. So I don't know how accurate that is, but that's what I remember personally.
That's about right. I feel like because Ulticanna Hawk was at one for a very long time, and then it famously came off on the ban list where we got three unlimits and nothing else. Shout out Multifaker. That is pretty accurate. It was even there was some discussion that it was limited at the time because of the combos taking too long and Konami just being like, we're not doing this. But now that a lot of decks in the game kind of have that going on, I guess it doesn't matter. And notably, they did slap a once per turn on the summon of this fusion, a hard once per turn. So maybe they've learned from their mistakes. So next one, we got Ritual Beast, Nochu Drago. And what's cool about this is that it looks like the tamer is riding on like a Chiwen, which is cool. So we got that, like, we got the Yang Xing lore connection. Lightworm Fusion, level 7, 24, 1900. Requires a Ritual Beast Tamer and a Spiritual Beast, like I think all of the fusions do. Has to be special summoned from the extra deck by banishing the above cards you control and from your graveyard, and you can only special summon it hard once per turn. So they gave this card a graveyard contact fusion, so you don't have to use material on the field anymore. You can just banish him from grave. I love Vicious Astrolaude. Don't you all love Vicious Astrolaude? One, your opponent can't target other Ritual Beast monsters you control with card effects. Cool. Two, quick effect, you can bounce it to the extra deck and then target one of your banished Ritual Beast monsters. Special summon it, but it can't attack directly. This is a little bit weird. Most of the other fusions let you tag out into two monsters when you bounce them out. This one only tags you into one, but it's also more free because you banish it from grave. So it's more of like a climby combo piece than it is anything else, but they did slap a hard once on it, so we're still going to have to suffer through Canahawk loops, but it's not going to be as egregious. they will end at some point.
No, they won't.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. This to me reads like it would actually make it take a little bit longer, right? Because this can just get the Canahawk back from banished, and just like it just makes the Canahawk loop go even longer.
You have to do one more Canahawk loop. This I think puts this at least puts a clock on them. I think what I know GGYGO was actually posting a couple of boards, and it looks like you end on like the new link 4, the link 2, one of the fusion guys, and then like set 3. Which is a fun board. What's funny?
I was talking to Gary about this. I'm not kidding. Like 2 weeks ago, mm-hmm. He was just like, "Dog, where's my Ritual Beast support? That's one of my favorite decks ever." It's so funny. The second this support came out, I was like, "I gotta call Gary. I gotta call Gary. I haven't yet, but I really need to call Gary." The second it came out, I was just like,
he's already posted.
He was telling me about it. He was asking for it 2 weeks ago. He spoke this into existence.
It's already. I mean, we knew it was Ritual Beast.
I almost forgot. Trishula, there's something you need to understand about being on this podcast.
Okay.
It gives you power.
Oh no.
You need to be very careful. You are now capable of speaking things into existence, Sonny, and that's not.
Oh, I'm
not
very familiar with that.
Yeah,
so I am very familiar with like willing. I only will terrible things into existence, though.
Right? Yeah, when you're on this power podcast, is not for good. When you're on this podcast, if you say I want X thing from Konami, it happens. I willed Gate Guardian as an archetype that gets support into existence.
He's been asking for.
So if I say I want Chaos Space and Magnuma and Striker back to 3, they'll give it back to me, right?
Absolutely.
Take a year, but it could happen.
Get absolutely.
I want Chaos Ruler, the chaotic magical dragon, to come off the ban list.
If you will it hard enough on this podcast and say it enough times, there's a I'm just gonna be honest with you. Somebody from Konami listens to this podcast. I don't know who it is. Somebody from Konami, maybe the R&D department. Somebody from Konami listens to this podcast. Because I'm just gonna let you know.
His track record is pretty.
It's been too many times.
I think it's just specifically Sunny. I think is the issue.
Maybe I've done it. I can
be trusted with these cards.
That's true.
I can be trusted with Dragonlink cards. Please bring them back.
Anyway,
I can be trusted. They're not a problem in OCG.
So actually, this is a little bit off topic. The other, all you need to know about the other two Ritual Beast cards. One of them is like a continuous spell Rota that adds like your mismatched name, and that resolves the consistency issue of oops too many elders or oops too many tamers. And then the Link 4 is like has a funny anti tribute effect that kills Drytron and Infernoid and nothing else. And then it's like SP but worse. And then I was going to ask about the Dragonlink hit actually because. Magnemite to 1 is, like, unfortunate, and Chaos Space to 1 really hurts, like, consistency and power. Do you, like...
Are we talking TCG?
Yeah, I jump back to TCG now that you brought it up. Like, what do you... How do you feel about the Chaos Space hits? Like, do you think Dragon Link needed a hit? Do you think that was the right one if it did? Like, where are you now that you've had, like, a month to settle?
Very sad. very sad.
Fair,
I was counting at Richmond. I think Dragonlink has 11 hits on the ban list now in the TCG or more. There are a lot of cards that have been hit in the TCG, partially because of Dragonlink. Here's the thing with dragons is those hits make the deck very dangerous to try and play, because you know I played it at Vancouver and the deck was still really really strong. I haven't gotten around to posted it, but there was like a very consistent way to end on Seals, Borland, Savage, IP, Beast, Regained, and like 3 to 4 cards in hand. Which
with Doom
1412,
you shut your mouth. Sword Soul has not been around a long time. We're not touching Sword Soul. Go away.
Okay.
Somebody ban that guy.
Thank you, Sunny.
Thank you, Sunny, for that. But also, that's quite a bit better than Seal's Pass. The problem is that hand like kind of wanted Wyverburster to like do it. You had to open like Black Metal plus Wyverburster and like any extender. So the Chaos Space hit is really unfortunate because now you're in this place where you have like two fewer copies of both Lubellion and Wyverburster in the deck. And on top of that, because you have those fewer copies, you can't play like the 45, 50 card decks that Dragonlink was like very commonly running because, you know, you would want to play all these cards, but you have to like put a few Garnets in your deck. And to do that, you know, you have to go over 40 and then you want to like space the deck out. So you can't play those cards anymore. You can't play those ratios anymore because if you do, it makes it like impossible for you to draw your actually good cards.
Yeah. That screws up. That probably screws up non-engine too, right? Because part of the benefit of having like the larger deck size is that you're like, oh, if I'm like hiding bricks, I can shove a couple extra hand traps in there or like a couple board.
Yeah,
breakers.
Exactly. Exactly, like you could pad out the deck with more non-engine, but the caveat to all of this is that it also just won the UK Open like this past
weekend. Yeah, that's true.
So it's still doing Dragon Link things. You can the deck could honestly get hit two more times and still be meta relevant.
I would like to say to anybody in chat, so somebody did make a joke about like I should buy all the Dragon Link cards. I'm just gonna say, if anybody's looking for like meta or you know rarity collection like cards that are too cheap and are going to go up, Chaos Space is not going to stay at one forever. And the Quarter Century Seeker of that card is like $3. It's way too cheap. So if anybody's ever looking for a penny stonk card,
there's no way that card's $3 because
it's $3
for the Quarter Century. I you're definitely wrong about that because I just bought them.
Really?
It's like $20.
Yeah, it's not the you're probably thinking of a different rarity. I think because the ultis are probably close to that.
They've okay. Wait, hold on. That's the collector's rare.
Yeah,
sorry, it's $5.
Which collector's rare? Chaos Space.
Okay, that's cheap. Okay, it is tanked in price. I spent way too much.
Now that's good. That means now you can buy a lot more.
Let me go put two in my shop. I spent $18 on mine.
All right, I feel
buy two more right now.
And then Konami will put it back to three. Trust. I feel your pain. I definitely bought my quarter century of Fossil Digs too early. I was just so excited. Yeah. Although I do have
The collectors.
Huh?
The collectors Fossil Digs.
I mean, maybe, but that was like, to be honest, I was totally happy to lose on those because it meant that there were seven more printings of Fossil Dig I could pick up. I'm gonna have on Sunday. I'm gonna post a picture of it's gonna be 30 copies of Fossil Dig. It's gonna be all a playset of all of them from the Rarity Collection. It's gonna be the collector's rares from Wild Survivors. It's gonna be the OPTS super rares, and it's gonna be the Structure Deck Commons. I'm gonna have all.
You're a crazy person.
I
would also say that Chaos Ruler is also too cheap. That card will come back eventually.
The reason
that... I do not think that.
No, sure. I don't think that's.
I didn't say I think it should. I think it will.
No,
I don't think that's gonna.
No,
maybe in like 5-6 years, but no time soon.
Chaos Ruler will come back whenever Helk comes back, and that's gonna be never.
Chaos Ruler comes back when Harp comes back.
No.
There is no way you think those cards are comparable.
Conceptually.
It's like I think that Konami is more willing to release a card like Chaos Ruler than a card like Colossus.
No, my God.
One is a combo enabler. One is an end-war piece. I feel like the end-war pieces are worse.
Sunny, do you know what card can be sent to the graveyard with a Chaos Ruler? Orcus Harp Horror.
I'm aware of it.
So what was this about power of speaking things into existence? I want that card back.
Actually, yeah.
I want it back. Can you speak it?
Okay. This is the inaugural episode with the three of us. I believe that we will see Chaos Ruler again. It may be 5 years, it may be 6 years. A broken clock is right twice a day. Thank you all so much for listening to the Top Cut Podcast. That's a joke.
Holy moly!
Well, you can see it right now in Master Duel.
We still got a little bit of time.
It is still legal there.
That's true.
I would like to say
Harp is not legal in Master Duel, is it? It's not.
Yeah, it is.
It is.
What?
Yeah.
So is Chaos Ruler.
I know Chaos Ruler.
Dragon Link has zero hits in Master Duel, actually.
Yeah,
except for LP, Aggro Pain, and Eclipse Wyvern.
Yeah, because you have three striker. Okay, I know because I was watching. Yeah. I watched a whole bunch of your run through the World's Grind, and I was seeing like this, like you making like the second. Yeah, that's unfortunate. But it was crazy that like it was. This is like off topic a bit. It was crazy to see you and Tempest like basically playing the same deck and just getting like just like the RNG difference making a huge. like mattering a whole bunch, like because he got like 25th. You're doing the same thing. Master Duel is just wild. But I got PTSD from seeing you do like the making the second striker dragon to do the pisty arrows, and I'm like, I'm on one hand I'm like it's so cool to see that. On the other hand I'm like I'm so glad you can't do that TCG anymore.
You absolutely can.
Oh, you just have to bring back the striker.
I was doing TCG combos during the World's Grind actually, because I was scared of hand traps. I could have done riskier combos, but I was playing super safe. So like in the TCG, this is what I was talking about with the crazy board, is like part of it is that you'll like loop back a striker dragon a lot of the time. That's one way you can do it. The other way you can do it is you make like Pisty and Triple Burst, and then you do something that's like really non-intuitive. You use a Link 3 and a Link 1 to make your Link 2 your seals, and you summon back the Link 3 later in the turn and just get your numbers back to like so that you don't lose link material.
And then you that's how you can squeeze your way into the Borderlands
zone.
That makes sense.
Yep.
So
yep.
We do have a few minutes left. We have about 20 minutes, maybe like 15. 15. Okay, we have 15. We started the podcast late, Skyhawk. We were live for several minutes before the podcast.
That's true. Sorry, I was using my recording as the
No. It's quite a bit later than that.
True.
So I want to take the last few minutes, since we do have a competitive player. I want to hear where you're at in as far as where the meta is and what we can be looking at into really into this weekend. Because there are several regionals this weekend. I think there's 4, 5, 6. There's a bunch. I have 2 just within like 3 hours of me. Plus, I think there's 2 remote dual ones. So
yeah,
just kind of your thoughts on the meta as a whole and like, you know, where we're at and where we might be going.
That is an extremely loaded question that I wish you had asked 20 minutes ago. This format's weird. I think it kind of has to start with addressing kind of like the elephant in the room, which is that this is a very diverse format. And a lot of people like so when it comes to like balancing a card game, a lot of people think that like diversity is what you should aim for in a format, where like a lot of different decks being playable and being good is like the ideal competitive format because you can like sign up with anything and do well, right?
Sure.
That is like the opposite of true. That is generally speaking the worst competitive formats that you can play in because your tournament stops becoming about like your prep and more like what you queue into over the course of a weekend. Because one of the better examples of this is like on a smaller scale, like we call them triangle formats, right? Where there's like 3 really good decks and like they all have a good matchup into each other. Those are like some of the worst formats to play in. Like they're some of the most beloved formats, but they're also some of the worst to try and play in because if I go to an event, like I'm thinking like Duelist Alliance format, that's kind of like the classic one where it's like Burning Abyss, Shadal, and like Clyfort, right?
Yep.
You know, if I show up with Shadal and I play against a bunch of, if I play against a bunch of BA players, I'm feeling great because I'm making Winda and they can never summon Dante. And, you know, the tournament's just easy for me. But if I queue up with Shadal and I queue against like 5 Clyforts, I'm like probably going X3 by round 6. Like that's like the issue is that like you can put in a ton of time and effort into a format and then how you perform is actually just more or less completely based on like what you play against. And that's not always true in other competitive like formats. So when you look at this format, there are a lot of decks that are really viable right now. And if you look at the past 2 YCSs, Indianapolis and Richmond, something that you'll notice is that the top cuts are super different. So like at Indianapolis, Rescue Ace was everywhere. You know, it dominated Indianapolis. I think like half of top cut was Rescue Ace. And then at Richmond, there was like 4 Rescue Ace players that topped. And like Unchained just came back out of nowhere. Like people thought the deck fell off and now all of a sudden, like it was the most represented deck in the top cut. And that to me is a little bit worrying because as a competitive player, I don't know what to make of that. My kind of intuition is that, you know, having played both these events, what everyone was talking about for Indianapolis was Unchained and Tarallament. And so everybody was like playing Bestials in their deck. They were playing big Bestial accounts. Some people are maining Bestials. So maybe those decks kind of got filtered out because people were really hard targeting them. And then when Rescue Ace did really well, everybody's like, oh, we have to prepare for Rescue Ace now. So, you know, everybody drops like the bestials and stuff, and they start playing stuff like Enemy Controller. They start playing stuff like Imperm, Veilers, and just all of these cards to hard target the Rescue Ace. And immediately, you know, Unchain and Tier go back to being like the two most represented decks. So this weekend, I feel like, is a very important weekend to watch to see, you know, whether or not, you know, we have a like a fluctuation going back and forth. Because another interesting thing that popped up in Richmond is a continuation of a trend that we saw start in Indy, which is combo decks kind of taking over the meta, like, at another level. So, like, on one level, you have people playing all these kind of, like, mid-rangey type decks trying to, you know, fight with each other over defensive card slots. And then you have combo decks like Manadium and now Infernoble just showing up and just saying, well, I'm going to just ignore everything you guys are doing, and I'm just going to put my cards on the table and ask if you have the right response. If you don't, I'm going to win the duel, and if not, you're, you know, like, going to interrupt me. So it's kind of a weird spot. What I kind of expect to happen is I think Rescue Ace is going to pop up again this coming weekend, because people, I think, are going to shift back targeting Tier and Unchained. And I think that we're going to see Infernoble continue to, like, do well. I think people have chosen Infernoble as the better combo deck between it and Manadium. So I think the combo decks are still going to be a problem, and it's just hard to say, because, you know, if I'm entering an event, I don't know what defensive cards I want to play. I don't know if I want to queue with enemy controllers. I don't know if I want to play imperms. And I, you know, I don't know if I need 15 hand traps to stop like an Infernoble player, or if I need, you know, mid-rangey cards to deal with turbulence, and contain.
I was going to say, it does, like, my analysis of the, like, Unchained coming back into the format really well too was like, people made their way off of board breakers and shifted a little bit to hand traps, but they didn't move to hand traps hard enough that it stopped Infernoble from going nuts. And Unchained just, like, didn't really lose to hand traps before. Like, I remember, like, one of Jesse Cotton's videos where he was talking about, like, the solutions of, like, board breakers and hand traps for Unchained are not great, but board breakers seem to be better, so I'll go with that. And then, but if people are doing that, then all the combo decks go nuts. So everybody's been, like, trying to find this, like, weird middle ground. And so Rescue Ace was like, oh, there's enough hand traps that it hurts us now. And yeah, like you said, people are less prepared for Unchained and Tier. I'm curious if the rise of Infernoble means we don't have the back and forth, because I feel like without it, we just kind of end up in a place where we're just, like, consistently shifting the non-engine, and then it's like, oh, we're not respecting Rescue Ace, now it's back, and now we're not respecting Tier and Unchained, and now it's back. And meanwhile, there's, like, the thing about the fluctuations is that it changes the rogue that you can play too. Like, for Indy, for example, the Makanko decks were all, like, bubbling out a little bit because everybody was playing breakers, and so, like, it was easier for somebody to pivot and, like, force them to go first. Not everybody was doing the acid golem stuff. Now you shift to where hand traps are more in the meta. Makanko, like, shift its play style and sneaks its way into top cut. More people are playing stuff like Droll, and there's a lot of shifter in a lot of side decks. So something like Dinomorphia, which doesn't care as much about Droll, and now has something like Intact to combat more Ash, sneaks its way into top cut. So, like, all of those fluctuations also change the, like, 10 other decks that you could play against in a tournament run, and it makes it impossible to prepare for.
Like, no, you're so right. And, you know, it's interesting specifically with Infernoble, because Infernoble complicates the whole question, because, like, we do have formats where we do shift back and forth. Like, every weekend, where, like, one weekend you're playing board breakers, the next weekend you're playing hand traps. And I think the first time I really remember that, like, being a constant presence was, like, right after Triple Tactics Talent came out, like, maybe 3-ish years ago.
It was like a game,
where, like,
of chicken.
Literally, yeah, it was literally every weekend. It's like, am I playing Tactics or am I not? But Infernoble complicates it, because something that was really interesting at Indianapolis was the second place list. A friend of mine, Logan, he played Rescue Ace with a lot of really interesting cards like Super Poly in the main deck. And Super Poly was really, really cool because it would beat all of the Rescue Ace boards, because you had Guilty Gear Freed to deal with like Baron plus SP. You had Draco Exquisite to deal with Savage plus Baron. You also had it to deal with Dispatter plus Baron versus Manadium. So it felt very, very well-rounded. But now the problem is that Infernoble, they can actually negate Super Poly with Angel their Ring. Equip spell. Yeah, the Angel Ring. Which is a really interesting card where it has to negate the first spell your opponent plays, but unlike other similar spell cards, it checks, like, I think at the resolution. So, like, if you use a Baron to negate one of the spells that they play, like, say I start with, I don't know, Upstart Goblin, and you Baron negate it, the Angel Ring actually won't end up negating that. So you can have your, I think the Charles are spell negates, so you can negate two spells before you would ever have to potentially negate a Super Poly. At that point, you're ripping four cards out of the opponent's hand. So Super Poly ends up being really, really bad against that deck when you'd think it'd be really good. That kind of limits your options.
Yeah, the cards that have done that in the past are like Abyss Scale the Mizuchi, but I think that card specifically says the first spell. I don't know, I might be wrong about that. And then the other two is like a Magician's Right Hand for Pendulum, and then Cerulean Skyfire for some reason in the Sacred Beast deck also does it, but you don't, we don't get a lot of cards that like negate at resolution and it screws up what you can play. Like so it means like if Infernoble is good, you have to play Hand Traps because the board breakers are just completely ineffective against Angel Ring, and that also affects what else is good, because if you're like a whole bunch of Hand Traps in the format, Unchained is like, oh hello, cool, I don't care. I can still set up Rage Escape with a Charvara in hand through whatever Hand Traps you're gonna throw at me, we're good.
So I do want to just chime in a small amount of something that I think about when I think of these super diverse formats. I know that, Trish, you are probably more on the side of a format that's like super duper diverse is probably not a good thing from like a competitive standpoint. Whereas Skyhawk, I know you kind of lean more to the other side of, you like having these like super duper diverse formats. You think that it's a positive. And I'm somewhere in the middle. I enjoy the diversity of the format, mainly though because I just like chaos. But I think that from a competition standpoint, it probably makes more sense to, if I was a competitor trying to win a YCS this weekend, that I would have the idea of, I don't think this much diversity is good because it makes it hard to game plan. I see both sides of it. But what I've always kind of wondered is, when you are dealing with this diverse of a format, and this question can be for both of you, do you find, either of you, that there are deck building decisions that you make just based on the base, just based on maybe not this is a these decks, you know, any of these 18 decks can be, you know, something I see and lose to, so I have to side for it. More, this format is diverse, so I should be playing these cards. So something I always think of is, I think of when it's a super diverse format, I want to play, as much as people hate this, I'll play Floodgates. So I'll play cards, I mean, when it's relevant in the diverse format, things like Anti-Spell, right? Things like Rivalry, things like Droll. And, you know, yeah, they suck. Nobody likes them, but they have such a broad-reaching application that, and they tend to be the most impactful cards against a variety of decks, in my experience. So I wonder if there are these deck building concessions that you make simply off the basis of, it's a diverse format, I need to hit as many things across as possible, right? I need to like reach across the board as much as possible.
Triple tactics thrust. So I think we were already starting to see the pain of, so I guess to clarify my position on like diverse formats, I think diverse formats are great for locals, and I think they're great for viewership. And I think for me, I find like, and it's tough because you have to rotate between them. Like tier zero formats, for example, can be some of the most rewarding for competitive players, but they suck for people who go to locals. So we have to find a balance, and like that's part of why I think a lot of people really liked Toss, is because you had four really good decks, but you also had a lot of rogue that you could still sneak in with. That wasn't like, but you didn't have to prepare for it as much. I played Paleo Dino for pretty much all of Toss format, but nobody ever had to prepare for me. So that's like that was kind of the ideal situation where you could pull up to locals with anything, but you had a clear established metagame. I definitely prefer more diverse formats, but like as somebody who's like trying to do well at an event, that's an advantage for me because I'm often playing rogue. So I come in with like an element of surprise in some sense. So I prefer those formats just personally for what I play. But from a competitive perspective, they're not very good. It's like,
yeah, that's no, like, I think you're right on the money too, is like, that's exactly how I feel about it, is that like diverse formats are fantastic if you like, if the extent of like your Yu-Gi-Oh engagement is like, I go to locals on Friday and then I like live a normal life. But like when you're like deep in the woods and it's like, oh, to top this YCS, like I need to I need to win, like it feels so much different. And another thing, like just to expand on that too, is I think diverse formats are actually the best formats for legacy formats. We see that right now with Edison. Sure. Is one of like Edison and Goat Control are some of like the most diverse formats that we ever had. And those are the formats that everybody is going back to like 10, 20 years later.
I will say it's very funny to hear someone say Goat format's one of the most diverse formats we've ever had. And like 5 years ago, it was the only deck they played. Like, oh, it's the only deck that's worth playing in the format. And now we're all like, actually, Goat Control is maybe like the sixth best deck.
Yeah. I don't know if it's like the sixth best deck. I still think it's like up there. But like, you know, like when I was growing up, when I was a little kid, like, you know, I wasn't good. I was like maybe like five, but like, or seven maybe. But like, I would like play in Goat locals. Like, I played in Goat Control format, like at card shops, like as a small child. I never encountered Goat Control once in my life back then. Yeah, I did not know that was a thing until I was like 17 years old.
I get it.
Like, it's crazy because like you had so many options in Goat format. The thing is just like when we say like, oh, the only thing you should be playing in that format is Goats, it's just that like that was probably your best bet if you wanted to do well, because it was like the most refined strategy. But like, you could have queued up with anything. Like,
for sure.
I played in Edison flight at Richmond, and when I was playing in the finals, I was playing Vayu Turbo, which is like one of like the top four decks in Edison, and my opponent was playing DD Stunt. Yo. Which was like an abysmally bad matchup. Like, I did not even know that was like a rogue deck you could play in Edison format.
That's the DD Survivor deck, right? With like the Macrocosmos.
Yep. Macros, Dai-Fi. Like, I got Dai-Fi, like activate right Dai-Fi, activate
from my locals
three
who
times.
Who mains that deck at locals for Edison tournaments?
Mm-hmm. Oh. I mean, he was a really good player, but like it was just painful. It felt like playing against Runic Stun, and I had just lost to Runic Stun in the main event, and I was just not there for it. I did not want to like do that again.
I'll say though, I think that the reason that we hone in on mega diverse formats in retro is because if you notice, we don't hone in on like every super diverse format, right?
Yeah.
I think that whether or not we judge a format's diversity as good or bad is extremely dependent on the reasons for that diversity. So a great example of this is if you go back to last summer's national season, that format was incredibly diverse, but not for good reasons. It was because there were a dozen decks that could utilize Mystic Mine, a dozen decks that could utilize the Scythe Lock. And it was not a fun form of diversity. It was different decks, but they're all trying to accomplish the same thing. I felt the same way near the beginning of last year when it was Prank Kids Adventure, right? I went to YCS Charlotte. It sucked. Prank Kids Adventure was everywhere. Then the ones that weren't doing Prank Kids Adventure were PK Adventure, Scythe Lock. They were doing Cybers Eldritch Scythe Lock. And yeah, it's diverse.
I remember Cybers Gadget. Oh, man.
Dude.
See, it's interesting that you bring that up, because to me, those are like my favorite diverse formats, where it's like you can because you can queue up with any deck and still like end on the same competent strategy. Because like one of my favorite formats I've played in a really long time was right after we Muradon in the TCG. I don't know if you remember that, but that was like Synchro Eldritch.
I was around like that. I was playing
I know Skyhawk was, because I remember like hearing of you for like the first time back then.
I started playing competitive again. I stopped in 2014 right before Duelist Alliance, and I picked back up.
Are you
after Toon Chaos came out, right before Rise of the Duelist.
You're not aware of the horrors of Deskbot 001.
I use it.
You don't know about Martial Metal Marcher bringing back any level 2 tuner.
Infernoble came out after
about Eldritch summoning like Savage Dragon Herald through Nib, drawing 5 cards and setting 5 cards.
I wasn't here for that, but got back in, me and my friend got back in together, and my get back into the game introduction, first thing that I watched, I was like, I did the same thing everyone does, and I was like, oh man, there's a Dark Magician deck. Built it. It sucked. But the only YouTuber that I knew of at the time, because I searched, I was like, just like Yu-Gi-Oh! Deck profile. And of course, who comes up? Team Sam X1, naturally. I became like a fan of his. I was cheering for him. And then they had the Remote Duel Invitational, and he wins with Dino. And so naturally, what do I do? First competitive deck I build coming back into the game is Dinosaur. So I build Dino, and my friend at the time is also just getting back into competitive. What does he do? There's a Noble Knights deck. He finds Pack and builds Infernoble.
Yep.
So that was the deck. I caught full horrors of like Deskbot, Aurora Dawn, Martial Metal Marcher, and like getting like hand grenaded for 4 or 5. Like, dude, I wasn't in the trenches for Eldritch, but I was in the trenches for Infernoble smoke grenade. No, okay.
I hear that, what you're saying, like, Trisha.
Good.
I was gonna say,
go ahead.
That I only wanted to be like, I hear what you're saying, because like that format was heinous, but also I miss it.
Right, like it was really heinous. Like there was a lot of like crazy stuff happening, but it was a really, really fun format to play in. And like, because I know the format you're talking about. Like I'm talking about just before Toon Chaos, because Toon Chaos like came out, and then like everybody thought Infernoble was really good. And then Dragons was like, oh, hey, we're just Infernoble, but like 100 times better. And then, but we're like that, just
also
the format,
Buster Lock.
Yeah, well, Buster Lock, like we hand loop you twice because we have Levianeer too. So we Levianeer you, we smoke grenade you, we end on like Seals, Herald, like, et cetera, blah, 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 blah. Right. But that was Toon Chaos, but before that was like the true like Helcdon Trenches format, where like people were just throwing that in everything. Like the most wild decks I think I have ever seen have been in that format, and it was really fun to play because you could always queue up with the same prep, because you knew no matter what you were playing against, they were going to do a Helcdon like shenanigan at some point.
Play Token Collector, move on, you know.
Yeah, and but like the what they did beyond that is what made the format interesting.
Yes,
because like sometimes you would play against like, you know, a pure combo deck that would do like Helcdon plus extra, or sometimes you'd play against Synchro Eldritch where it's like, okay, I'm gonna Helcdon. Oh, you stop me. Okay, I'm setting 4 back row. Good luck.
Yep. The you really could do it with anything too. I have these cards sitting here around. So this is a first ulti copy of Mecha Phantom Beast Hamstrat. Might not show up well on my camera because my internet is dying apparently. And then level 2 tuner, Dino Wrestler, Koala Silent. So I was playing like, I think it was there might be some videos up on Sir Eminon's channel of me playing in like the Reddit Championship Series at that time. If you want to know what those deck lists were looking like, we used to just play in anything during COVID, but you could do just some nasty stuff. Like we were playing Hamstrat and Aerosquin in 60 card Helcdon Dinosaur, because if you played both Hamstrat and Aerosquin, it turns just the Helc line into VFD plus Savage. Koala Silent being a level 2 tuner that you can summon in Dinosaur meant that the Dinosaur combo could like slap a Dulka on top of your Helcdon board. And you would still get the advantages of like playing the blind second dino lists that showed up during that format as like a way to combat the wombo combo. But then Eldritch comes in and is like, okay, if that's the counterplay, I'm setting four cards. And then that was like the whole like centerpiece of the format. Like you could play Token Collector as both a way to combat the Linkross Halkdon stuff and also as a way to do your own combos with Lost World. You had people citing stuff like Survival's End. That's just my perspective as a dino player, but every deck at the time was finding absolute nonsense like that to be trying. And when we're digging that deep into the card pool is what I love, like formats. So even though it was heinous,
did you ever encounter the Gizmek hand trap that summoned the barrier statue on your first turn? No. It's like, what is happening?
So you could actually play that. You could play that in Dinosaur, because if they ever pulled an Earth out of deck, Baby Sarasaurus is a 500/500. Oh. So you could summon Baby from deck with the Gizmek if they weren't playing the Hal Climb.
Okay. But respectfully and lovingly, we are at time. About 15 minutes ago. Which is my own fault.
But this is so fun. This is fun.
It's good.
I will say one last thing before I lead us into the outro, which is we can all like agree that Auroradon's cancer, but like Hulk to one would like that would be fun, right?
No,
I'm for it. I'm for it. I'm a Hulk apologist. I'm for that.
Just how? Just like one how? Like we can all be trusted with one how.
I'm a be real. I would rather have Auroradon back than Halk. I want to be like I miss Linkross mainly so that I can just like link into something and set Survival's End and have tokens. But I miss Auroradon specifically because like you can make use of like the Mecha Phantom Beast stuff. It has and Auroradon has other utility like the tribute a card to destroy something. Came up a lot of times. Like I'm getting too deep into the weeds here. In Dino, if you didn't see any dinosaurs but you saw Lost World, you could activate the Lost World Auroradon tribute to destroy one of your own tokens, Lost World protected, to pop Baby from deck, and then you could do like
when
your
you
full Dino combo from there.
Say, I'm getting a bit into the weeds here, but in Dino, it's gonna be
in Dino.
But anyway, and Auroradon like a tribute 3 to add back a trap card is so funny that it just has that effect for no reason. Here's a fun fact: did you know that the tribute effect of Auroradon is not once per turn? You can only link summon it once per turn, but you can use the tribute effect multiple times.
We're here.
Anyway,
Don't give them ideas.
Listen, thank you everyone for tuning in to this very special episode of the Top Cut Yu-Gi-Oh! Podcast. Let's go ahead and thank all of our wonderful patrons before we go. And I'm just gonna have to move this window so that I can see your chat as I say this, because this is gonna be fun. So,
of course,
a huge thank you to Always Second, Darkwing Duck Duck Gussie, Zyphorus, Opelousa, Bow of the Flood Gutussie.
They're not funny. They're not funny.
They're getting crazier. Big Stinky, Dimension Shift These Nuts. Last time Skyhawk read it, I didn't get to see it.
There's no way.
Okay, no, hold on. We're on name like 6 of 40, okay?
Keep it going. Oh, no.
Ding Dong's Hostess of the Yang Zing, Give Me That Harusi Konami, HGH Cyber, John Leo, Mountain Man, Oatmeal Spaghetti, Owen Alvarado, Pistol Plays Pendulums, and Silver Hope, Understanding and Reading Are Two Different Things, Virtually Savior's World, What Do You Call a Magic Owl, Houdini, Wind Up Carrier, Zinfidel Maidy, Aaron Gardner, Alexander Chan, Asami, Ashless Chaps, Atsuyo, Simp of the Silver Castle, Blackwing, Silverwind the Ascendant is the best Floodgate, Blue Eyes is best, Copium, Box Wine, Chubby Ninja, Come On and Get Your Game On, Dragon Maidenless Behavior, I'm About to Rika Glamour Tribute for Cost These Plant Nuts in Your Mouth, Level 4 Fire Warrior Gaming, Little Stinky, Lama Yama, Cam Sarama, Max CPAC, Old Man Red, Pin Code 143, and Wanted, Seeker of Your Mum's Sinful Spoils. Thank you all so much for your continued support of the podcast. Now, before we go, very quickly, all I need, one word, yes or no. This is the final test of your whether or not we accept you as a co-host here of the Top Cut Yu-Gi-Oh! Podcast. The question is, it's very simple. Again, yes or no will suffice. Is Opelousa a floodgate?
No.
Okay. All right. Well, hey, listen, thank you all so much for joining us and our new host, Trishula of the Top Cut Yu-Gi-Oh! Podcast. And we do film generally on Sundays and Wednesdays. Trishula, you're live like, what, like 6-7 days a week for like 12 hours a day or something?
I live on Twitch. I'm always here.
And you can find him at twitch.tv/TrishulaTTV. Trishula spelled just like on the Yu-Gi-Oh! Card Trishula Dragon of the Ice Bear. You can also find him on Twitter at TrishulaTTV also.
Yep.
Okay. Of course, you can find Skyhawk on Twitter at Skyhawk Sings. And you can find me on Twitter at Top Cut Podcast. And if you want to get your stupid name read out on the podcast, please be reasonable. We will just not read bad ones. You can do that for as little as $1 a month on our Patreon. And if you want an extra episode every week, you can do that for as little as $5 a month on our Patreon.
Before we go, I do have a card pun for this episode.
Okay. He does this every episode.
You could say this is a reboot, a relaunch, a launch of the podcast. It's a boot sector launch of the podcast.
Oh my god.
I was hoping you were gonna go with Red Reboot, which should come back to 3. Thank you everybody, and have a great weekend everyone.
Catch you later.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.